This is the Gen X Taste Podcast. I'm Christy Myers.
And I'm Lynn Chen. And welcome to our seasonal show about nostalgia and novelty, an exploration of embracing the evolution. Today's format is a little bit different, as we're going to explain more in a minute. But first, let us do a little catch up. Christy, how have you been since we last spoke in January?
And we're almost out of the winter. I mean, it's, you know, it's California. So it's just basically a little bit of rain is our winter, a little bit colder. But I'm good. We're gearing up for spring break. We are going to go east and south. We're going to go to Alabama. My grandmother is from there and she was buried there and I've never been there. So we're going to spend a couple days there. My dad, my aunt, and everybody's coming in. I think it'll be really cool to be in that area of the country, which I've never been to. And Jack has been studying civil rights and so it'll be an interesting place for us to go for that too. And then we're going to go to visit some friends off the coast of Georgia and spend some time there.
I'm going to Georgia too.
I know, but I think we're going to miss each other.
Yeah.
Aren't you going right after me?
I think.
We're going to miss each other. You'll be in Atlanta?
Yes, I'll be in Atlanta shooting a short film with a friend and then staying a few days afterwards.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I like Atlanta. Atlanta's a cool city.
Yeah, I've never been. I'm excited.
So that's what we're doing for spring break. And then I think swinging down into Florida to see Jeff's mom and family there.
Got it. Any highlights from the last few months?
Let's see. Highlights from the last few months. I can't remember the last few months, which means I think it's been a good time, right? I'd say a highlight for
that
me was
memorable.
When that's how memorable it was. It just keeps going. You know, a highlight for me was when you and I and Anna sat down and had our little like catch up. Our little time.
You know, that kind of goes along with our theme from last month's podcast about adult friendships.
Yeah.
We really had to nail down that time.
And we did it like, it took like a month. Like we had to wait for a month for that to happen.
To have a quick 1 hour coffee outside of Starbucks.
I think it was like 45 minutes by the time it was all said and done.
That's true.
But we waited for a month to do it. It was short when we did it. But I will say that I loved it. And it has really kept me going since then. Just having that time to connect with you guys who are such good friends and just laugh and chit chat and have a cup of tea and not, it was just great. It was like, it was this little like bubble reprieve in my life of my time with you. And I was thinking about it actually this morning. I was thinking, when is our next one? And then I was like, oh yeah, we did it at the beginning of March. So it's not till April. I was like, that's too long. Cause we, for everyone listening, we decided we're going to do it once a month. Just going to meet once a month. But it was great. I mean, it was great. I
completely feel the same way.
Yeah.
And dare I say, it reminded me a little bit of like when you watch Sex and the City and they're having brunch. Because it felt like gang's all here.
Yeah.
I know I poo-pooed on Sex and the City last
you
time.
Did.
But there
you
is
did.
Something there's something about those brunches and there's something about getting together with people who you don't have to, you know, put on airs for or anything.
Yeah.
That you can just show up as yourself and be like, this is what's going on. Or not. Like even just we were just gabbing.
Just
gab. And then
gabbing.
We were like, we gotta go.
We got to go. And it was, you know what? Also, I think here's the funny thing. I feel like sometimes my perspective is skewed. Like with Sex and the City, I was like, oh, they meet every week or they meet every like they're always together. We don't know that. It's a TV show. Like it could, you know, a month, 2 months could have spanned between these meetings. And I think sometimes we think, oh, well, if we can't make it so regular, it can't be like every week, then it's not really worth doing, or it's not really like that big of a deal, but it was a big deal to like sit down with the two of you. And it was definitely a highlight and I've definitely thought about it and I left feeling just refreshed. I left feeling more like myself.
Yeah.
I left with a toothpick that you,
oh yes.
I
gave you these little, link for an Amazon, like, what are these? These are like metal toothpicks.
They're called like reusable toothpicks. But I do have to say, okay, so This is yours like this too?
Oh, mine doesn't have a different end. Yours has two ends. Yours is a hook and a what is that?
I don't know what this is. So, okay, for everyone who can't see this, it's like we should post this because this is excellent. I don't know if our listeners are having this, but as Lynn and I have gotten older, we have realized that anytime we eat, we get stuff stuck in our teeth. And so Lynn showed me her solve for this, which is a reusable metal toothpick. And you get them on Amazon and they have like a little chain on them at the top. So you can like hang them to your keys or whatever. And I unscrewed. So they come in a pack of two. So I was like, oh, this is perfect because Jeff can have one too because he's having that problem as well. And I unscrewed his and the top part came off with a keychain and it shows the metal toothpick. And then I unscrewed mine and the bottom part came off. I did not realize it was a two-parter thing. And it's this weird, it looks like a little sander.
Yeah, like to polish your tooth maybe?
That's what Jeff said, but I can't, this would take the enamel off. Like, yeah, what?
Don't use that.
I don't know what this is. And I thought that it was one of each. And so I was going to send this back. And then my son was playing around with it and figured out that it was two-sided, which is great. But I don't, now I'm scared of this other side. I don't know what.
Yeah, don't maybe use that other side.
Maybe you can also file your nails.
I think it's supposed to be to like polish your tooth, but don't do that. I'd like, don't. We're not dentists.
It's like a sander.
don't use that.
I mean, I guess if you like get a crown and you need to sand off the top or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But don't use it. Just use the toothpick part.
Okay. Yeah, well, this isn't even your potluck.
I've got so many.
That isn't even the potluck. Well,
that could have been your potluck.
That could have been
my potluck.
It wasn't,
but it could have been your potluck.
You got a bonus potluck little tidbit.
That's right.
So your highlight was the tea with me. So mm-hmm. great. with me and Anna. And I would say when I'm thinking back to the last few months, I'm taking a rewrite class right now.
Right. You were telling me. So, okay. Tell our readers. Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm sorry.
Phone.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I thought that was off. There we go.
We all know what your phone sounds like now.
There it is.
You have an old school ring, which is so Gen X of you.
That is so Gen X of me, isn't it?
So
because
Gen X.
I won't listen to it. If it's one of the fancy ringtones, I won't pay attention. But if it's a ring like that, I'll pay attention.
Like the good old fashioned rotary and touch dial phones we had that we grew up
with. That's right. But our kids wouldn't know what to do with.
Yes, this rewrite class I'm taking is, I'm a member of Rideback Ranch's Rise Circle. And so we are doing a rewrite class of a first draft that we had. And it's interesting because I actually can spit out a first draft of a screenplay or a script really, really quickly. In fact, I'll link it in the show notes, but I actually did my own like writing class for how I write so quickly. And because I know that's not normal. I know that most people take a lot more time, but I'm able to do that. The problem is that once I'm done, I'm like, I don't want to revisit it. I don't want to do it again. Maybe that's from acting. Maybe it's like, we did the take.
Let's like just
either,
be done.
Either adjust me and tell me what to do, but I don't want to have to figure out those little details.
What to do next.
Exactly. How to fix it. So what's been great is this class has really invigorated me to be, to have like a structure, which I don't love. I don't love structure and I don't love index cards and I don't love figuring out themes. And I don't love all those other things that one must do when you write and storytell. But, it's done in such a tangible way that I feel psyched to write, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding. And so I'd say that has been my highlight because I've been writing so much and in this world so much. And it's a great reminder. Maybe I should re-listen to this in like 7 months when I'm trying to sell this and nobody wants to buy it. That like, this is why I do it. The process of it is so fun. And I actually do enjoy, like some mornings I wake up like ready to go at 4 a.m. And I just have ideas swirling in my head. And so I'll just like pull out my laptop and just start to write. And what a fun, like flow state to be in.
Yeah.
That is rare and also like it feels very special.
Yeah.
You know, so I've been really like enjoying it and enjoying the fact that like it doesn't have to just be my shitty first draft that gets me to feel that way. I can do it with my second draft. and I've been dipping into another script that it's not like the first, second, third, or fourth draft. It's like probably the 15th or 16th draft. And I'm still feeling like invigorated to write. So I'm working on multiple projects simultaneously, but for some reason I'm able to keep them all separate, which feels like another like challenge that used to be a lot. Compartmentalizing used to come more difficult to me, and now it's like I'm flexing that muscle a little bit more and getting much better at it. So I'm really happy about that, because you know, it's like being creative as an actor, you need permission to do it
too. Yeah,
but being a writer, it's so like solitary and like it's just you and your imagination. So being able to play with both of those worlds for the last few months on a regular basis has been great for me. Really, really great for me.
And do you find, because I find when I'm writing, but and also when I'm acting, sometimes when you get like stuck in a world of a character and you can't kind of move through that, sometimes switching the project and writing something different or switching the character you're acting and performing something different loosens you up. So it allows you to kind of be a little bit more free in other projects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting how one world will affect the other world. It feels like magic in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah.
Well, as we hinted before, there is a little bit of a change in format today because we were joined by our very first Gen X Taste podcast guest. Unfortunately, I had to be solo because Christy did have an event at her son's school, but Christy, your spirit was with us. She picked the surprise theme for this episode, which you are going to hear right after Christy tells us a little bit more about our special guest.
So Maggie Smith is the New York Times bestselling author of 7 books of poetry and prose, including You Could Make This Place Beautiful, Good Bones, Goldenrod, Lamp of the Body, The Well Speaks of Its Own Poison, and Keep Moving, Notes on Loss, Creativity, and Change. Her newest book is My Thoughts Have Wings, a picture book for children, illustrated by Leanne Hatch. Smith's poems and essays have appeared in the New York Times, The New Yorker, The Paris Review, Time, The Nation, The Atlantic, and The Best American Poetry. So I'll be back after the interview with my thoughts and my own shares, but for now, let's all sit back and enjoy Lynn's chat with Maggie Smith.
So Maggie, thank you for being here with me. And Christy is sorry that she can't be with us because she was really looking forward to talking to you and meeting you also. So we loved your book. Her kids loved your book. Aww. And we just, I mean, I don't think her kids have read your memoir and your poetry, but I am also.
I hope not. Yeah. Not that I'm here to espouse parenting advice, but I feel like maybe that's not great.
Do you want to learn about divorce?
Maybe some red flags to look for so you do things differently in your own adulthood, guys. Maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps not. Perhaps not.
It's good to see you.
It is good to see you too. And can you talk a little bit more about your book? And like why you decided to do a children's book?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my kids are now 15 and 11. And this is my first children's book. So it seems like maybe I should have been doing this when they were the ages of reading picture books. But no, I mean, I started out really writing for adults, and I've been doing that for, 20 some years. And then a few years ago, it was sort of peak pandemic lockdown, which was really stressful for all of us. But so my kids had the concerns of every other child in the world, which is like, we can't see our friends, we can't hug our grandparents, we can't go to school. Why is mom bleaching the mail? All of that.
Remember when we thought that was a smart thing to do?
Why is mom Cloroxing the Amazon boxes? all of those completely normal things to go through as a child. And that all of that isolation and fear and like we were scared without knowing how to protect ourselves or them, and then try to add like a child's consciousness into all of that confusion. It was not great. And then at the same time that that was all happening globally in our house, we had our own stuff. And of course, everyone does, because when there's a global pandemic, your regular personal problems don't just get put on hold until the global problems are ready to be set aside so that you can return to your regular personal problems. So at the same time as lockdown that year, my kids were going through like divorce and custody stuff. And then their dad that year moved like 500 miles away. And so they had the regular terrible, and then they had the sort of like upgraded personal terrible happening. And my son at the time was, I don't know, first, second grade, and just really had a hard time at night. And I think, I mean, I don't know about you, but that's so me. You know, I can be really productive during the day, even when things are hard, because the emails don't stop and the deadlines don't stop and the phone calls don't stop and the Zooms don't stop. But when I lie down at night, it's like that quiet space where all the other stuff that's been, you've been pushing to the margins can flood in and keep you awake.
Totally.
And if, yeah. And like kids are like that too. So we would have these really just generally bad tuck-ins where I would go in and be like, okay, good night, buddy. And he would be like, I'm trying to think good thoughts, but the bad thoughts are pushing them out of the way. And I was like, oh man, I feel you on that, my man.
Like, yeah. Wow.
I feel you. And so we began this bedtime ritual that is really the sort of, you know, quote unquote plot of this picture book, My Thoughts Have Wings. And it was this ritual of like, first of all, I hear your worries and concerns and the things that are making you sad, and I validate them, because nobody ever felt better or stopped worrying by being told it's not a big deal and you shouldn't be thinking about that stuff. Like, it's gaslighty and strange. And I don't think we should do it to adults or children. So being like, yeah, you're carrying a lot of heavy stuff right now, and I wish I could take all of that away and like hit the reset button and make all of this different, but I can't. But, or, and there's all this really wonderful stuff too. Like, that's not gone. Some of it's on hold, right? Because it was peak pandemic. So some of it is on hold, but a lot of it is stuff that we still have. So like, let's not discount all of the stuff that you're not happy about, but let's just like slightly turn our attention a little over in this direction and think about all of the good things we have to look forward to. And like, let's just think about some happy memories and try to turn ourselves toward good thoughts in order to kind of set the stage for a calmer bedtime experience. And it worked. Like, it, we had these like lovely connecting bedtimes where we laugh about, you know, memories that we had, and we talked about things that we were going to do once we could get out into the world and do them again. And I realized it was a strategy, not just for him to use at other times of day, but for me.
Totally. When I was reading the book, I was like taking notes.
Yeah, like
how to do this evening ritual.
Right. And it's honestly, it's like something you can do anytime, because what I'm realizing, it's not a kid thing. It's not an adult thing. I think it's a human thing. The voice in our head that says what's going wrong or could go wrong is a loud voice. And the voice in our head that says like, yeah, but listen, like, think of all these things you have to be grateful for. And look at all the things that are going right in your life. And think about all these people who love you. It's like a whisper. I don't know what that is, but the good stuff always gets shouted down by that loud voice that says like, yeah, but, yeah, but. And so like, I really wanted him to have a strategy he could use, not just at bedtime, but also when he wasn't with me, like whenever during the day he got that feeling that like, ugh, it's a pileup of bad. And we all feel that way sometimes. And usually for very valid reasons, he could turn to himself and say, yes, and, all of those things are real and true, and that's hard. And all of these other great things are real and true too. And so, yeah, so I thought maybe this is a resource that we could put in book form for other families who might also be dealing with stressful tuck-ins and hard bedtimes and, you know, overactive worrying minds. And maybe we can, maybe this is something that they might get some use out of too. And so that's where the inspiration came from.
What draft were you on when you finally let your kids read it?
Well, I think I told Rhett pretty early on. I was like, I think I'm going to make this a book. And he was like, cool. And so I didn't actually show him or Violet. I didn't show them the manuscript. I waited until the first rough illustrations came in from the illustrator. And so I sat, I brought Vi into my office and sat in this chair and put Rhett in my lap and brought the PDF up. And it was just pencil sketches at that time with, like, you know, typed up words over the top. It wasn't designed, but that they could see what I had written and then could see Leanne Hatch's beautiful sort of like renditions of what his thoughts were. Like, what a cool thing to be a kid and be like, an actual artist just drew my happy thoughts and worries. Because if I had done it, it would have been like stick people and Sharpie on a pizza box. Like, it would have had no artistic qualities at all. And so I think that was the first time they really saw the whole thing, because I knew if they just looked at the manuscript, it wouldn't mean as much, but seeing it with the art, even just in rough form, would make it make sense to the two of them. And so ever since then, Rhett has called it our book. He's like, it's our book. And it is. I know.
Does he sign books with you?
He has offered. He's like, do you want me to sign that? I'm like, honestly, they have probably, people would love that if they got a signed copy. And then there was like a little writ with like a heart or a soccer ball or something.
Totally. Yes.
That would be, maybe I'll auction that off, for a good cause at some point. But yeah, he calls it our book because it's my words, but also they're his words. I mean, yeah. The spreads in this book that are the child's happy memories and the spreads in this book that are the child's worries, they're his. I mean, this is really ripped directly from our lives here.
Talk about a great, you know, visual journal for him when he's an adult and he's thinking back to the time of the pandemic when he was a kid.
And yeah.
Like, just having that, like, you know how people are like, I didn't keep my journal, I don't want to look at it, but he has this beautifully rendered,
I know, artistic capsule. Yeah. Like hardcover capsule. I know. I was cleaning out, I've got this little dresser in our entryway, this like little pink kids dresser, and it's where we keep our like hats, scarves, mittens, all the stuff you need when you live in Ohio because winter lasts forever. And I was cleaning out his hat, scarves, mittens drawer, and I found all these tiny, like, first grade fabric masks, like back before we knew that you needed an N95. Yeah. So he was wearing these that I'd ordered on Etsy, you know, and I ordered him ones I thought he would wear. So I ordered him like Star Wars prints and like different little fabric masks that, like, now we know did really next to nothing, except for, you know, like muffle his voice in his classroom. But I found it, and it's like the tiniest, it's smaller than the palm of my hand. And I thought, I got rid of a bunch of stuff, but I thought, I'm keeping these again, because time capsule, if he ever wants to show me, if he has kids, like, we went through that, we like lived through this weird, anxious, historic time. And for a while there, I went to school every day wearing this tiny fabric Star Wars mask that my mom bought me. Because she was desperate to keep us safe.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for everything. Because I just feel like your words, whenever I sit and really ingest them, I feel heard. And I feel, I mean, this is nothing new to you. You're a poet. Like, this is what you do. You take words and you imbue them with feeling in a form that, to me, I just don't know how you do it. You know, I'm sure people would say that about me with acting or with music or with other
forms of art, but like,
yeah,
to me, like, because I've sat and tried to write poetry, I'm just like, you are a magician. So thank you for sharing your magic craft with the world.
That's so I feel that so you're lovely. Right, though. I feel the same way. I mean, I feel the same way about you. I feel the same way about Leanne, who illustrated this book. I mean, I think we all kind of feel like whatever the thing is that we don't quite do to the level that we would like to do it or have never even attempted,
it
does feel like magic. Like, what kind of wild alchemy is that, that you're able to take, like, your experience, your consciousness, your body, and make something out of nothing? Which is what we do when we make any form of art. It does sort of feel like magic. And I don't know about you, but it still feels like that to me when I make things. Like, sometimes I make something and I'm like, where did that come from exactly?
It's the most vulnerable part of you. And this going back to like what you were just saying about having the voices in your head, it's allowing the voice that isn't the cheerleader to be much louder than the naysayer. And that takes, I don't know what it is other than magic that allows that to come through stronger in certain people than others, because there are just so many talented people in the world who, as you said, like, don't even attempt, don't even take the step forward. So I almost feel like it's an act of bravery. It's an act of courage.
Of courage.
To allow people to not only see you, but then there's the other part of it, which is when it's out in the world, to A, allow people to applaud you, which is harder than it sounds.
Yeah.
And then the obvious, very obvious, like the rejection, the feeling like you're invisible, and also the naysayers, which are the voice in your head that you thought were fake, that are actually very real.
They're real, and they're on Goodreads and on IMDb. And no, it's like, true.
Wait a second, they are actually real.
Like, how did you? How did I make that voice in my head into a 3D human being that's in the world commenting on my work?
Well, this is part of why I'm so happy that you're here, because I get to ask you these kinds of questions. And I lured you here under the guise of us both being Gen X and this being the Gen X Taste podcast. And since, you know, we are from this generation which straddled this line of internet, like, do you remember where you were when you first pulled up Ask Jeeves, or what was it, Alta Vista?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I didn't send my first email until college. And
same.
And it was like one of those terrible like computer lab computers with like the green type on the like fuzzy screen, and everything was like just looked like a movie from the 80s where they tried to imagine what computers would look like in the future. And I remember having in graduate school, when I was working on my first book of poems, having dial up, which that was very finicky, and it would make that terrible sound every time the modem sound. And actually, like, sometimes not being able to get on and believing if I like swirled my desktop mouse around in a very specific way, like, it would be good luck in order to actually get me on the internet. And now it's like we just have computers in our pockets that we carry around at all time and can like do anything. And even my teenager has a said computer that she carries around in her pocket all the time and can do anything. So yeah, it is a completely different mindset to have grown up like handwriting your high school papers and taking them to the neighbor to type on a typewriter for you, which is what I did.
Taking typing like class, you know,
I never learned
on typewriters.
Really? I still can't type. No. I absolutely cheated in high school keyboarding class. And the only class I like blatantly cheated in, and it's actually probably now the only class I would still use. And so to this day, I'm now like working on, I think, my 9th book, And I only use my index fingers to type. It's a sad state of affairs.
As Alanis Morissette would say, isn't it ironic?
Isn't it a bummer?
Well, I'm going to pull up the topic because we usually switch a topic each month and we, Christy and I, choose what it's going to be. And this month, Christy, since she can't join us, sent hers in via email. So I'm just going to pull it up and see what she's asking. It's a surprise to both of us. We don't know what the topic is. Okay. She says, on a slightly light tone and with the Oscars having just happened, a movie that holds up from your youth.
Okay.
Did something pop into your mind?
One of them did, only because my daughter asked if we could watch it this weekend, and it's The Goonies.
You're talking to the right person.
Okay. So, I mean, does it hold up in every aspect? No. And, like, nothing from the 80s. Like, I have watched some of those John Hughes movies with my daughter, and then we have to have this, like, talk about, frankly, rape culture. And, I mean, it's... You know,
there's a lot in Pretty in Pink.
We just watched Pretty in Pink.
There's a lot.
We've watched, what else? We watched Some Kind of Wonderful. Like, I've been sort of on, we watched Better Off Dead. Like, I've been taking her through. That one, actually, I think does hold up.
I do think I do.
It's one of my favorites.
When he was a kid, and then I rewatched it with him, and he was like, wow. This is great. And one of the people has his last name, Joanne Florman. He gets very excited. He got so excited. We're like, oh my God, someone with your last name.
It's such a weird movie. I mean, I think that's so much what I like about those old, like the 80s movies I grew up with. There's so much bizarre stuff in there and they're so quotable. Yes. You know, like if my son asks for money for a field trip now, he'll like, it's not unusual to hear a child in my house now in this year say $2.
Oh, wow.
Right? Like the paper boy. Wow. Right? And it doesn't matter. He'll be like $8 because no field trips are $2 anymore in the year 2024. But, it's definitely over a fiver. The other one that really stands up that we watch all the time, speaking of fivers or Finskies, is Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes.
Because he tries to slip a fiver to the maitre d' at the French restaurant and gets laughed out of town.
My husband's last name is almost in that too. Because my husband's name is Abe Foreman Greenwald.
Abe Foreman, the sausage king of Chicago?
The Greenwald part isn't getting much love in the 80s, but definitely the Foreman, Froman. And he's vegetarian, so if you can imagine, he's heard it his whole life.
Yeah, so definitely Better Off Dead, The Goonies, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I think are three that I feel confident stand the test of time.
I would agree, and now I'm thinking about it. Okay, so Goonies was targeted towards, children or teens? Like, I was watching it when I was a child.
I thought about it. My sister recently let her kids watch it, which I was shocked because her kids are, I think, 5 and 7. And I was like, there's a dead body in a freezer.
Yeah.
And, like, gangsters and, like... You know, the whole blender scene, there's some stuff in it that's pretty scary, frankly.
The deformed sloth.
Chunk and sloth and the baby Ruth. Like, I was like, really? 5 and 7? I'm not sure. But then again, I did let my 5-year-old watch Raiders of the Lost Ark because I conveniently forgot about the Nazis with their faces melting at the end that movie. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen that seminal film. And so sometimes we don't realize that Gen X, like 80s PG meant nothing because for a long time, PG-13 didn't even exist yet. So things were either R or PG. Yeah. And so PG actually encapsulated like quite a bit of language, sex, and violence that they thought was like just a hair under R.
There were so many boobs. Just like hanging out
a lot of boobs,
just so much gratuitous nudity.
Yeah, a lot of boobs, a lot of language, a lot of questionable, just like icky stuff that now it's pretty interesting to watch movies with my kids and they're like, ooh, like that's really racist, or ooh, that like that's all like really like that's not kosher. Like we cannot get away with that stuff anymore. And I'm like, no, these movies could not be made in the same way in the 21st century.
I wish that people understood microaggressions or just blatant racism back in the day when I was growing up. I felt nuts. I felt like nuts being like saying like, oh, that's racist.
Long
character.
Saying
like, no, it's funny.
I have not let her watch that one in part because of that. I'm like, honestly, between that and the sort of like rapiness of the blonde girl getting her hair cut and then being sent home.
Yeah.
With the other character, like there's some stuff in that movie. I'm like we're going to have some conversations around it. Like I'd almost rather them just watch The Shining because, you know, and she's seen The Shining and I was more comfortable with her seeing The Shining than 16 Candles because I'm like, well, The Shining is scary, but it's straightforward. Like we know who the bad guys are.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Who is the hero? Is the hero Anthony Michael Hall scoring those panties and holding them up for everyone to see?
Yeah, he's not, because it's also very directly implied at the end of that night that he had slept with the incapacitated popular girl, which is rape. I'm sorry if she was passed out. Yeah. So yeah, these are all like teaching moments, as we say.
Very, very useful moments. But going back to Goonies and who we were when we were watching it, I remember the scene where they show One-Eyed Willie finally, you know, at the very end, and he's got the patch over his eye, and the camera does this thing where it pans to him from his gold to like right there, and it plays like this da-da-da, da-da-da score.
It does.
I remember being so frightened by that when I was a child, that when I would shower, I would like be like, don't look at the window, because One-Eyed Willie might be just hanging out there. I could hear like the music in my head of like, dun dun dun. I might look and there might be a skeleton there. I don't know why in the shower more so than like,
that was the whole thing.
It was like, I was like very frightened to take a shower because I was really scared One-Eyed Willie was going to show up. So I'm wondering if there was anything that you remember at when you were young being afraid of, or like not sitting right with you.
Okay, so this is not normal. And I think anything you preface with that is gonna be good, right?
Right.
But remember in that movie how they had that sort of like stone thing with the holes on it that they had to line up and then it would be like the map?
Yes.
So the house I grew up in, and you know this from the picture book because there's a scene in the picture book that says fishing in the creek behind Mimi and Pawpaw's house. That is my house that I grew up in that my parents still live in. There's a creek behind their house, like a literal creek. It's not a river. You can stand in it and you're up to your knees in water. It is just a creek, but you can just walk across it. When I was a kid, I was friends with the kids who lived on the other side of the creek, and we built a rock bridge and we would, you know, cross back and forth to play at each other's houses. And those kids' parents owned like a pizza shop, and they gave me a keychain from the pizza shop that was one of those flexible rubber sort of keychains that, like, if you held it up to the sun, it would make the color kind of shine on the ground. It was red. And so I would do this, right? So I would do this thing with this keychain from Massey's Pizza. And I would go back in the creek area and I would hold the keychain up, and wherever the sun shined down, it would make this like red spot, like a sun catcher on a rock. And I'd be like, that's where we're going to dig for treasure. Like there was pirate treasure in the creek in central Ohio. And this was completely in my mind from watching Goonies. And I knew that it wasn't real. I was old enough to know it wasn't real, but we just spent so much time playing pretend in our backyard that the pretend play we did for a while after seeing that movie was all about unearthing, you know, like the marble bag of rubies, yes, and sapphires.
Yes. Oh my God. I just had a sensory memory that I don't think I've ever admitted to anyone. And I think it's this is weird.
This is weird.
I used to have like fake jewels, like just a bag of fake. It wasn't even a bag. I put them into a sock so that they would be the fake jewels. Then I would put them into my hand so I could reenact the scene, you know, of finding the jewels.
Yeah. No sign. No sign.
Yeah. Then what I would do would I would go backwards to the scene where they have them in their mouth. Remember, mouth has it in his mouth.
Oh yeah.
And she hits his head and he spits it out. I would shove the jewels into my mouth. Just to see what it felt like. Just to see.
Like a hamster.
I think I was reenacting Corey Feldman, you know, just like to get into the role. Because maybe I'd play Mouth one day in the reboot. And I would do that. And I have to say, I just remembered that the other day I was cleaning my jewelry and I looked at my big emerald ring and I was, for a second, I remember the urge, the feeling of like, put that in your mouth.
But then I didn't.
I stopped myself. And that's the difference between Lynn of today and the Lynn growing up. I didn't do it.
But I love this.
And you know what's funny about this topic is that because she brings it up because of the Oscars. I was at I was watching the Oscars the other night. And with my cousin who's younger, I mean, she's in her 20s, but she's, you know, of another generation. And it was when Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger were presenting.
Oh, God.
And immediately I was like, twins. And I just kept talking about twins. And they were like, what's twins?
They don't know.
I said, wonderful movie. And I started going on and on about Ivan Reitman and the story and the sperm milkshake. I don't know if you remember it.
I have never seen Twins. I mean, I'm well aware of it.
Experiment. This is a great experiment because I was trying to tell them it holds up and it holds up. So you guys need to watch it this weekend.
Okay.
They were like, sure. But now I would be very curious what your Gen X eyes would think of it. Because I think, you know, them watching anything that I recommend is going to not be received as well as somebody who's actually from my generation. So I'm really curious.
Okay. I remember, it's funny, I remember the movie poster. So, of course, if I saw them together, I would immediately say twins. Like, it's in my mind,
even though I didn't see the movie. Junior.
Okay, that's not on my radar at all.
That was a movie where, picture it, Arnold Schwarzenegger is, he's pregnant. I believe, I never saw it, but I can see that. See, no one talks about that. We all talk about twins.
And somebody was like, we're going to green light that.
I do think that together.
Sometimes when we're watching stuff and my kids will be like, somebody sat at a table and gave a synopsis of this. And then somebody was like, yeah, we'll give you millions of dollars for that.
Exactly.
And it doesn't add up.
Exactly.
So twins is on the syllabus. I'm going to have to follow up with that. Okay.
Great. Follow up with twins.
I'll let you know.
I cannot wait to hear your movie report about this. Okay. So the other thing that we always do in this podcast is we do a thing called the potluck dish. This is from back when we used to only talk about food. We moved from another podcast called The Actor's Diet, where we only talked about food, and now we're Gen XT. So this can encompass anything food related. It can be, but it can also be beauty, fashion, home, mental health. This is like a show and tell. So this is something that you have been loving and you feel like you need to tell people, and maybe choose something that's like not as simple as like a book or something that requires a little more, not discussion, but like explanation. So this is your opportunity to really share what that might be.
Okay. So I won't say a book because people always expect writers to like recommend books, right? And I feel like I'm always recommending music, so I'm not going to recommend music, but I will say I've been listening to a lot of World Party today in my Gen X soul because the singer just died.
Oh, really?
And yes. I listened to like a fair amount of World Party as it is, like I have it on vinyl, but whenever we lose someone, it's like an opportunity to like dig back in. Okay. Yeah. So I'm not going to do that. Maybe not food, because I'm a vegetarian and nothing I eat is that interesting. Like, it's pretty much like the only delicious.
I'm interested.
Are you interested? I don't know if anyone's interested. The one thing that I think is interesting about what it was to be Gen X to what it is that I'm doing now, and I realize this is part because my skin is aging, but like, if you remember 1980s skincare was like putting paint stripper on your face.
Between Noxzema and Seabreeze.
And Stridex pads.
It was just like
a terrible stinging chemical that would like burn your nose hairs when you took the lid off and peeled the little foil thing back. And then they just sat in there marinating in this basically rubbing alcohol.
Yes.
With like other terrible chemicals. I'm clearly not going to get any kind of Stridex sponsorship offers after this. And then, yeah, after like doing the Noxzema, which was also minty,
yes,
and the Seabreeze, which was also like bracingly minty.
Yeah.
If you had any like blemishes coming up, you would finish off with just a real soothing marinated Stridex pad that was like, felt like a paper towel because it had like those little grabby bits.
Yeah.
And then to really finish it off, you would load it up with either, you know, white regular Clearasil, or later tinted, which if you wanted to wear to middle school, you could, but people would know.
Yes.
And it was just all the harshest, like it was, everything was mattifying. Everything was meant to strip every oil out of your face. And given that I had oily skin, I was like, I'm all for this. And now if you had told me that in like 2023, 2024, I would be washing my face with oil and then following up with more oil and then before bed putting on more oil, there's just no way that Stridex Seabreeze me would have been like, but my skin's going to look terrible. Like,
I completely understand. I had the same fear.
And it's working. Like, so the crazy thing is, I feel like I spent all my teen years stripping oil out of my skin and then using that like green CoverGirl compact that you could buy at the drugstore that was like clarifying, and even it smelled like medicine, and constantly patting the oil off your face after it would erupt post everything you'd just done.
Good old press powder compact.
Press powder compact. I can still smell it. Like I can and hear the click. It's like, it's a sense memory I'll never get out of my body. And now everything is like oil. Everything is dewy. You're not supposed to look like a China doll. Like, you know, like with chalky kind of skin, you're supposed to look like maybe you just took a long walk.
Yeah.
You're allowed to look a little shiny. You're allowed to look glistening, you know, like succulent, glow.
Dewy.
The whole thing is, I was so dewy when I was 14. I was like the dewiest. And I fought the dewiness so hard. And now my skin is like drying out and I have the kind of skin I wanted when I was 14, but I'm loading it up with oil to like plump it up.
Tell me more about this oil. Give me specifics. What are you using?
Okay. What do I use? What is the cleanser I use is, I think it's Dr. Elsa Youngman. It's J-U-N-G-M-A-N. And it's just like a couple pumps of that. Wipe it on my face, let it sit for a minute. And then I just take like a reusable cotton pad. It's reminiscent in shape and size of a Stridex pad, but it's
very
kind,
satisfying to see all the stuff.
Very satisfying. And I've been, instead of doing the like disposable cotton rounds that you buy in the tube, I've been buying the ones you just wash in a little like mesh lingerie bag in the washing machine. And I feel a little bit better about that. And then I've been doing, I'm not even going to remember the name of the oil I put on after that. It's a different brand. It's like a, it's supposed to, it's, it's supposed to do the thing that we were told was not possible, which is clear your pores with oil. It's the most.
It's like your skin is producing the oil. I'm not a scientist. It's producing the oil. And when you give it the oil, then it doesn't have to produce as much. I think that's
which makes sense, right? Like basically
the theory behind it.
Yeah, we paint stripped our face into hyper-producing oil factories.
Yeah.
Because we basically just like dehydrated it so badly that it was like, oh my gosh, we've got to kick up oil production because there's no moisture here. So we did it to ourselves. And now it totally makes sense that the idea is like if you put sort of healthy oils on your face, then it won't feel the need to kick into production a ton more. And somehow it keeps it all balanced. I also do think that I just have drier skin because I'm 47 years old and my skin at 14 is not the same as it is now.
Yeah, skin definitely changes.
It is shocking to me how much calmer my skin is at 47, dumping oil on it 3 times a day. And like using sunblock and all the stuff that I could never have used without a major eruption when I was a teenager. So I just keep telling my daughter, just wait. Everything is going to just balance out. Just wait. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so lucky, the youths of today.
They
know about sunscreen. Had I known about sunscreen, I feel like
Things would be very
different today.
Burnt and peeled so many times as a child. Also, I think now that we're back into like a healthy, natural eyebrow land, you know, and then, I mean, and I do blame Drew Barrymore for this, and she didn't know, like it wasn't her fault, but like when she plucked her 90s eyebrows into a perfect 1920s pencil line, I did that too, and they never fully recovered from that. Like, they're better now, but like, you can't do that over and over and over again and expect them just to bounce back into like beautiful, bushy eyebrows that are suddenly popular again. Like, I looked like Brooke Shields when I was 10 in my little eyebrows, and then I was like, but it was not cool. Like,
yeah. I know. Now the caterpillar eyes are very, very in. And if it ever goes out again, if like people start plucking, I hope they do the thing. Because I know my friend played Anna Mae Wong in Hollywood, which was a Netflix series and Ryan Murphy's series. And so it's that era, old Hollywood. And I believe our friend did her makeup. I believe what they did was like they just foundationed over it.
You can. Yes.
Yeah. And it looked just as good.
Yep.
It looked just as good. No one has to pluck. No one has to.
Yeah. And just grow your bangs. Like do what I do.
Grow your bangs.
Just grow your bangs. It's like you don't need Botox if you grow your bangs. Yeah. No one cares what's going on with your eyebrows if you grow your bangs. Like it's my midlife security blanket. The big heavy blunt bang.
I love, but you look so good with bangs.
That's so nice.
Don't do well with bangs.
No.
I know because I cut them once on a whim while I was in a makeup chair for a movie, because what happened was I was playing the sister to the lead and I looked at her photo on the thing and I was like, people are going to confuse us, you know, because we look very similar. And I was like, I just turned to the hair person. I said, cut some bangs. And she was like, I was like, for my art. You know, for my art.
Sacrifice.
And like, okay. So they cut bangs and they did not look good. And I came home that day and my husband was like, what have you done? Why did you do that? And I was like, for my art.
For my art.
Which, by the way, like, I don't think anyone like watching would have confused us.
No, because, probably not.
The acting was like the fact that I was playing an uptight person and she was, it's a movie's called The People I Slept With. So she is a woman who sleeps with a lot of people, gets pregnant. She tries to figure out who the baby daddy is. We are not alike at all in the movie whatsoever. By the way, now that I just said that plot out loud, I'm like, is this a John Hughes movie? like what am I promoting here? Anyway, bangs. They were a bad idea for me, but a great idea for everyone else.
I think most people work, but yeah, maybe I'm wrong about that. Yeah, I could be wrong.
My potluck that I'm bringing is this, I guess it's a hack, a little trick that I recently learned. And I'm looking at the both of us. Yeah, I know people are listening to this, but Maggie and I are looking at one another on video. She is wearing, not AirPods. What are they called? Earbuds. Earpods. What are these called? Headphones.
Headphones, but like the kind that go in your ear, but they're wired.
Yes, wired headphones. She's wearing wired headphones, and I am wearing a set of like big cans on my ear. Both have wires. However, my hack is for headphones that don't have wires. So I don't know if you own a pair of AirPods or other things. Yes, she does. Great. Well, this is my hack. Sometimes when I have them in, because I have the AirPods that are noise canceling.
Yeah.
And then I can't hear anything, you know? So I decided I was going to just wear one at a time so that I could hear what was happening around me, because my husband's always talking to me and I'm like,
and you're like,
can't hear you. Sorry. We're not going to communicate because I'm in the world. Sorry. And I don't want to pause. So. Or when I'm outside, more important is my safety when I'm outside. So I started just wearing one, but that's not even the hack. The real hack is that when you do this, the battery is extended in the sense that you can just switch to the left one when the right one runs out. So the charging situation is a lot better. That's the real hack, because yeah, you're saving your life. You can listen to your spouse. But
the real hack is that
you don't have to recharge it as much. So this comes in very handy for when you're traveling, when you really don't have time to, because my AirPods are always in, and I always want to like have one ear open to be able to hear what's happening in the world. But in order to do that, you need a strong battery. So that's my hack. And I'm going to assume I only have AirPods. I'm going to assume this works for any wireless.
Oh, probably. Right? My hack related to AirPods is I have two sets so that there's always one charging and then one I'm using. Because as an introvert, my hack is I have them in a lot, but like a lot of times they're not on.
Yes. Don't talk to me.
Because I have, but I can hear you, and actually there's nothing happening in these.
Oh, shit. That doesn't work if you only have one in, then they can
hear you. They know you can hear them. So, like, either you need to have long hair that you have covering the ear that you don't, and then you just kind of tuck your hair behind.
You just do a whole tuck.
And then you just point to the ear with the AirPod in, and then nobody knows you don't have one over here, and you can hear them. Because that's the one thing. It's like, if I'm traveling, if I'm in an airport, if I'm someplace and I don't necessarily want to have like chit chat, it's so helpful to have the big can. I have those too. Like, I really love the big, because those just say from a distance, don't talk to me because I am not here to talk right now. Yeah, that is helpful.
That is very, very helpful. Well, this is good to know. Maggie, this has been so delightful. Thank you for taking the time this morning to talk with me. Is there anything else you want to talk about or discuss or promote, or where can people find you? All of that.
Goodness, no. Oh, they can find me. They can find me on the internet, where I spend too much time. We just spend too much time there. This is where we meet people and see people and spend time with our friends. So I'm Maggie Smith Poet pretty much everywhere, which helps people find me and not the dame, because it can get a little confusing. If you just are looking for Maggie Smith, I might be hard to find, because I do share a name with a very incredible other human being in the world. But Maggie Smith Poet is an easy way to find me. And if you Google that, you will be able to get to my social media or my website or my Substack or anything.
Okay, terrific. Well, thank you so much. And I know Christy's going to be bummed, but we are going to just keep talking about you after this conversation is done. So if you're listening, stay tuned for that.
Christy. Thank you for that very thoughtful topic. Very appropriate for the Oscars, which were recently. What is your favorite childhood movie that still holds up?
You know, what's funny is this is a good question for me because I have a hard time with this question. And then I was listening to the interview and I had so many thoughts. If I had been there, I was like, wanted to join in so much. I have a really hard time with movies from our childhood for all the reasons that you guys talked about. And Goonies in particular, I watched a little bit of it again thinking, oh, maybe Jack would like to see this one, remembering, you know, the imagination part of it, the treasure hunting, the pirates, the, you know, that kind of thing. And what Maggie was talking about being in the creek and hunting for pirate's gold. So I was remembering that part of it. But then when I watched the little bit of it, like the racism, the body shaming, the, like, I was just like, I can't show this to them because I can't. My kids are 11 and 7 now. So we're not ready to have, it's not that we're not ready to have these conversations, but they don't get humor like that because we spend a lot of time talking about things like that, about microaggressions, like you were saying, about like their school is very, that is a subject that people talk about a lot, about body shaming, about like that language, that type of play, we just don't do. And so for them watching something like that, they would not understand. They would just find the whole thing offensive. Like, why would they be saying that to their friends? Why would they be, if this is their friend, why would they be acting that way? So we ultimately didn't show it to them. And I felt the same way even about like Ghostbusters. Like thinking about Ghostbusters was another one we wanted to show them, but everyone smokes constantly in that movie. And there's like, you know, the part where Sigourney Weaver is kind of possessed sexually, by this demon and becomes this very like sexual kind of being. And I was like, I don't know I don't know that this is something that's explainable at this point. So we ultimately haven't shown that one either. And I'm so let down by the 80s movies in that way. I feel so sad about it. And I also am like, I can't believe I watched this and it never, like, none of this ever really bothered me then. And now looking back, I'm just can't understand it. So those were my problem with movies from our childhood. So I do like the movie Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Does that start Jake from 16 Candles? Why Close. Am I seeing there's a horse?
Yes,
right?
Yes, it does star him. Is yes, it
is
does.
It, is, yes, and right.
And I forgot her name now, but she's
I forget
also,
his name. I'm sorry to that actor.
Yes.
He's now a carpenter, famously, right? Or something. Yeah. Like he left the business and became a carpenter.
It's a movie about a girl growing up in the Depression, and she is like, can't, you know, they won't let her do, she's like a tomboy and she's sporty and she wants to like be part of this horse diving show, and they won't let her do it. And then she just perseveres. Like she finds a way to do it and she does it. And then she goes blind, but then she does it anyway. And
wow.
I think, I don't know, cause I haven't watched it in a while, but maybe it holds up. That's my hope for, and I was very into that one. So
wait,
there you go.
Should we watch this together?
We have to watch this
to see if it holds up.
And you know what's funny is I only have it in cassette, like in VHS.
What?
In VHS. Oh, I have it in VHS.
No. We're not watching it. How would we watch that?
I know. VHS? Here's the problem. I don't have a VHS anymore. And I got so mad because I was like, the other day, somebody sent me a YouTube video of my high school show choir, right, performing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I suddenly got very nostalgic and was like, I was great. Like in my mind, I was great in show choir. And I was like, I should find those videos and show my kids. They'll definitely want to see me dancing and singing. But then I realized they're all on cassette. And I asked Jeff, where's our cassette?
VHS.
And I was like, where's our VHS player? And he was like, oh, we don't have one anymore. And I was like, how am I going to watch my videotapes of myself.
There are services for this. I need to do that. We live in LA. Don't worry. You'll be able to do it.
I don't think I can do that, obviously, with Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken.
No. Lucky for you, it's on Disney Plus as we speak.
Are you serious? Because I have Disney Plus. I'm serious.
Yes. Let's make a date. To watch Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken, and we'll report back to you whether or not we like it or not.
Very little chance that my children will join in on this, so we could.
They're not invited.
We don't need them.
We don't need them there. Okay. Let's see what your potluck dish is.
Okay, so my potluck dish is this podcast I've been listening to. I'm kind of obsessed with it. I'm going to pull it up so that you can see the cover of it. But it is called Lives Less Ordinary. Do you know it?
Okay, I don't. I've never heard of it.
So it's through the BBC, and it is, hang on, it looks like this. It's red. It's got a red background, and it's Lives Less Ordinary.
Very catchy.
It is stories of, like, people's stories of, like, these incredible things that they lived through or that they witnessed or that was happening in the world. Like, there was a guy – I just listened to one about a guy who was trapped in a boat underwater for 3 days. But he was in, like, this pocket so he could breathe, but his feet were in the water at the bottom of the ocean in the dark. And he lived – everyone else on the boat died, but he lived. It was like a storm or something that they went under. And then he became a rescue diver afterwards. Oh, wow. Like,
these are inspiring stories.
Yeah. Some of them are inspiring. Some of them are kind of like, some of them are kind of hard to listen to. You know what I mean? But they are inspiring in the way that, that people have lived through these and gone on, you know, in their lives. And it's I find it really fascinating. Sometimes I get stuck in my own, like, routine and existence of, like, what I do in the day and the school and meetings and auditions and, you know, clients and things like that. And it's just really cool to listen to people who are also living ordinary lives, but have these extraordinary experiences or have this different view on the world. And there was one that I actually, my 11-year-old and I listened to together, was about these two guys who met when they were young. They were like 11 and 12 when they met, and Raiders of the Lost Ark had just come out, and they went and saw it in the movie theater, and they decided they were going to remake it shot for shot.
I've seen Do you know this?
Yes.
I've actually seen it.
Yeah. So it went
I didn't watch the whole thing, okay.
You didn't?
but I know what you're talking about. I've seen parts of it, yes.
I want to see it now that I've listened to this.
Yeah.
So they basically – it took 7 years or more for them to make this, and they just kind of made it, and it consumed their entire childhood. And as – you know, as friends, they kind of broke up and got back together as, you know, as they got older and went through experiences in life. And then they kind of went their separate ways. And one was living in LA and one was, I think, in Florida and doing different things. And then somebody got a hold of their copy of it, and then it went viral, and then it went to film festivals and things like that. And so then it brought them back together and kind of closed that chapter. But it was really cool to hear. Like, I was thinking about it as I was thinking about our podcast today, because the movies defined they had the power of kind of defining your life. And these two boys, like, it defined every moment of their childhood and was this huge, big thing that they did. And then they just kind of left it. It was what it was. Like, it served its purpose. But it was awesome to think, like, the way that they got the submarine shot and the way that, you know, I just think the podcast is a good testimony of, like, what if?
Yeah.
You know, and how would
I? What if we did a remake shot by shot of Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken? And this is just the seed that's been planted, and you're listening to it right now.
That's right.
Of me and Christy.
Mm-hmm.
And 20 years from now,
yes,
someone's going to listen to this and be like, do you remember that Gen X Taste podcast where Lynn and Christy
decided
started
and they
the Wild Hearts
then
Can't Be Broken.
Got a horse, which lives in Lynn's guest room, and they built a water tank in the back of Christy's house.
We never know.
Shot
we
by
never
shot.
Know what's going to happen. But
I know.
We are running out of time, so we are going to stop and let you ponder all of these things. Ponder what the hell that nub on the other end of that hook
what
was.
Is that?
We're going to ponder that. We're going to ponder how we're going to remake shot by shot this movie.
Ours can't be broke. First, we have to make sure it holds up. If we want to support it or not.
Yeah.
And then we have to go to like the plains because it's depression time. We've got to get some carts, some horses, some hay, things we need.
I think I'm actually allergic to horses. This might be an issue. This might be a problem. Anyway, Christy, why don't you bring us out?
Subscribe to us at genxtaste.substack.com. Follow us on social media at Miss Lin Chen and at Christy Myers LA, and find me for counseling at howtochow.com.
Yes, and extra special thanks to Maggie for being our guest. We're going to have show notes for everything, including all of Maggie's wonderful books and her Substack as well. And that's it. Thanks for listening to our spring episode. We'll see you again in the summer, or hear you again, or speak to you again. You'll hear us again.
You'll hear us.
You'll hear from us again in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give you an update. I'm going to make a note right now. We'll get to give you an update about Wild Hearts Candy Cooking. That's our homework.
That is our homework.
That's our homework more than anything else, is to watch that.
Hopefully it's enjoyable. What if it's like halfway through we hate it?
Then you know what? We're adults. We don't have to finish our homework.
That's true. We don't have to
do
that.
We don't have to.
We're not getting graded on this.
Yeah. No one's getting graded. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.